Welcome back to Raw Health Radio, everyone. It's Dave here. I'm sounding a little bit unwell at the moment. I'm feeling fine, but we'll get to why that's going on in a second. I did a video last week on Friday about rotation dieting, and there are some things that some people talk really well about and know a lot about in the health industry, and then there are some things that other people just don't know that much about. I, for example, I can't stand capsicum. I don't like beetroot. I can't say Worcestershire sauce is another thing that I can't do. So I went and found an expert who can probably do a lot better job on part two of my rotation dieting series than I can. So I've got her on the line. Jo Rushton, how are you doing?
Hey, Dave. I'm doing good. I'm doing better than you sound, mate. What's going on?
Well, I had dairy on the weekend. I haven't eaten dairy in forever. It's literally been so long. And the only symptom that I've got is that my voice has gone all funny from the dairy, which is just a clear sign that I shouldn't eat it. But I sound terrible, feeling great though. So please bear with me, everyone. Now, Jo is an expert when it comes to food. She's a chef. She's been on TV talking about food. She's written a book all about it. So Jo, why don't you give us a little bit of background about what you do around the food world?
Sure, Dave. Well, I started my career in the catering industry as a chef many, many moons ago now. And, you know, I guess I've come, full circle since then. When I was chefing, it was really very much about how food tastes and what you've got to do to make it look good and taste good. And I have to admit, there wasn't a great deal of emphasis on the nutritional side and the nourishing side of food, at least, you know, when I was in the industry. And I guess from my own health journey and having to reclaim my own health over the years, I've really taken my skills as a chef, knowledge for food, and then added on to that the need to really understand food from a nutritional point of view and from the point of view as to how it plays back into building health and creating health. And, you know, there's so much wonderful research out there today around, you know, nutrigenomics and how food nutrition actually turns on and turns off our genes. And that's a, you know, an awesome area of science that I'm very interested in. And so I guess, you know, my career from working in the catering industry to becoming a personal trainer and then a health and lifestyle coach, and now being part of the Czech faculty teaching the holistic lifestyle coaching course of Paul's. It's really, you know, my knowledge has taken me full circle, and I guess, you know, I'm passionate about being able to really get hands-on and get in people's kitchens and really show them how easy it is, because, you know, I can take those old chef days and bring them back and really show people some really great shortcuts in the kitchen, how it can be kind of demystified to not be overwhelming, and to learn about food in a very different way to perhaps what that person is used to and how they're used to working with food. So that's a, you know, a little short synopsis.
Good answer. I like that one. That's why I've brought you on, because you're much better at this kind of stuff than me. So last week, Jo, I spoke about a rotation diet and kind of why it's bad to eat the same thing over and over and over again. Do you want to give us your spin on what a rotation diet is and why it's not really a diet?
Look, absolutely. Look, rotational dieting, or should we say eating in a way in which you are opening up the opportunity for variety in your diet. That's really what rotational dieting is. And it's used for a number of reasons. One obviously being exactly that, to increase the range of nutrients that you're getting in from your selection of foods. It's also used with people who have allergies or intolerances and is really actually trying to determine what could it be that they are intolerant to. And that's when what we call either training rotation diets or the full rotation diet becomes very helpful. So if I kind of started with the analogy of what Paul uses as what he calls the training diary, which is the less strict approach. What it is really making sure that, as opposed to separating your foods into their groups or their family groups, or, you know, as it's called, the taxonomy of foods, rather than being strict about choosing specifically from a family of food for any given day, what you're really focusing on is, for example, let's take your protein, and you're really looking at just rotating a different meat every day. So when you look at a full rotation diet, you would take, let's say, the family of mammals as bovine, okay, and you would look at the different meats that would make up, you know, the bovine family. And if you were on a strict rotation, then you would only eat from the selection of meats from the bovine family for that one particular day.
That includes things like milk and cheese on that day as well, or what's the story there?
If it's relevant to the bovine family. So, you know, for example, we're looking at, you know, beef, buffalo, lamb, and then the cheeses from cow, sheep, goat, then, you know, that's perfectly fine. But if you were to take just a training rotation approach, then you would go as far as rotating the meats. For example, you may do, you know, chicken on one day, you may do beef on another day, you may do lamb on another day, okay? And that's what we would call a training rotation. So if it was a strict rotation, then I wouldn't be allowed, if I had, let's say, beef on Monday, I wouldn't be allowed anything else from the bovine family until Friday. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, you know, looking at the other animals within the bovine family, you would have to exclude all of those until the next time you're allowed to eat out of that family group. Okay. And that's the very, very strict taxonomy rotational diet. Eating very specifically from only the family of foods on that one day, and then not eating from that particular family of food until 4 days later. Now, you can imagine for some people that would be, you know, quite overwhelming, because, you know, there'd be a lot that they would need to start to learn about the various different family of foods and how plants are segregated into the different families, and how animals, mammals, and birds are segregated as well. So a way you can lead up to that more stricter routine or rotation is by doing, as I said, the training rotation, which is where you would have a different protein every day. So, you know, really good, simple example of that is, you know, we have chicken on a Monday, we have lamb on Tuesday, we have beef on Wednesday, we have pork on Thursday, you know, and you might throw in a fish as another example on the fifth day. And then you can, you know, rotate back again to what you had on Monday. So that's, you know, that's the general premise of how the rotation works. And then obviously you're doing the same with the vegetable or the plant family groups. So they're all divided up into the different groups, such as your, you know, your nightshades, which have your peppers and your potatoes and your tomatoes in them, and, you know, various number of other foods within the nightshades. And you would be choosing just purely from one day from the foods from your nightshades. And then you'd move on to the next day and you would choose from a different plant group. So it certainly requires some planning, absolutely requires some planning. But let's, you know, let's put it out there that to the degree in which somebody is suffering from allergies or food intolerances, where, you know, their pain is high enough to want to actually do something about it, and if rotational dieting is one of the quickest, cheapest ways of actually getting to the bottom of what is irritating you, then for most people who are in enough pain, it's, you know, it's not a hardship. They're, you know, they're wanting to get out of pain, and at the end of the day, if that's the cheapest, easiest way, then, you know, and for most people, it's probably the most effective because of it being so definitive as to what it is that you are intolerant to. Does that make sense, Dave?
It does. If this is sounding overwhelming to people, would you suggest they start with the plant-based food first or the meat food first, or what would you suggest there?
Look, that's a really good question, and I can give some examples from the clients that I've worked with. Everyone's ready, you know, at different stages, and everyone is at a different stage of readiness. So with some of my clients, I've only ever had one client where I've been able to literally qualify their readiness to go into the extreme, most strict taxonomy rotation diet, where they're just like, absolutely, I'm there, tell me what to do, I'll follow it, not a problem. And, you know, that kind of alpha male type A personality loves discipline, loves structure, and it really can suit that type of personality. And if the pain is high enough and they're, you know, ready to get out of pain, then it doesn't take much to motivate. But I've, you know, as I said, I've only had one person who has been ready to start at the level of really using the idea of food taxonomy as a way of rotating their foods. For everybody else, Dave, I've started off really finding out what's doable for them. And a lot of that is dependent on their level of knowledge around food and their level of skill in the kitchen for food preparation, what they're prepared to start learning to do. A lot of my clients, when I start working with them, actually rely on a lot of takeout, and they don't do a lot of shopping themselves. They don't actually spend a lot of time in the kitchen themselves. And there's some fundamental principles right there. I really look at those as boxes you've got to tick around the fundamentals of nutrition. You have to be prepared to get your hands dirty in the kitchen just a little bit to really start ticking some foundational boxes. Otherwise, you know, you're going to be relying on fast food, takeout on the way home, pre-prepared meals that you just really cannot, you can't trust for how, you know, what's in them, number one, how they've been prepared, who's prepared them. So, you know, it's about taking control back, and it's about taking the health back into your own hands and taking some accountability and some responsibility for the process. So getting people in the kitchen, giving them a bit of understanding around, you know, what are proteins, what are carbohydrates, and, you know, what are good fats, and then really making it a doable basic entry level. And that's where I start with proteins, Dave. I get people to start rotating their proteins. That's often the easiest thing to do first up, mainly because most people, I say this, and then I think of the families with the children I work with. Most people, you know, have got a fairly good variety of vegetables. Having said that, as I said, you know, some families with kids that aren't really across too much variety in their vegetables and can be quite, you know, fussy eaters, that can be challenging. But if we start with the proteins and start looking at rotating proteins on a four-day basis, then you can start looking at, you know, choosing two or three different vegetables and starting to rotate those again on the same basis of a four-day rotation. Fats and oils are the last thing that I rotate. They seem to have the least response in terms of irritation or unless, of course, you have a direct outright allergy to certain oils, if it was a peanut oil as an example. But other forms of fat, such as ghee, coconut oil, macadamia nut oil, olive oil, you know, fats as a general point, they don't tend to cause too much problems. So, you know, they're the sort of last things that I would start rotating.
Yeah.
How's that sounding so far?
That makes sense. So let's talk about what this might look like, because you said if you split up your week into, or you split up the food groups and eat them on a particular day, Does that have to be breakfast, lunch, dinner, or can that be 24 hours?
So that's another really good question. So the less experience someone has and the less experience they have in the kitchen prepping and organizing themselves, one great tip is to get them to start to have, let's say they start the rotation at dinner on a Monday night. Okay. That's the easiest way, especially when we're trying to create flow and efficiency, and we're trying to get people to take their own lunch to work, and it makes it a lot easier to utilize leftovers. So if we started, let's say, with doing a roast chicken for dinner on a bird day, and we started and we did roast chicken for dinner for Monday night, and then we looked at utilizing the rest of that leftover chicken for breakfast and lunch on Tuesday, and then we're looking for Tuesday night's dinner for that particular protein to be changed. So I guess you got two things that come up there. Often clients say to me, so does that mean I have to eat chicken for breakfast and for lunch? And so what I do there is again, I kind of qualify what we're looking to achieve, because the easiest way to do this is, yes, to eat the chicken for the Monday night dinner and then breakfast Tuesday, and for lunch. And then it becomes really easy then to rotate into the next protein.
So that would be an
But
example of a training rotation diet, is that right?
correct. Yeah,
Yep.
correct. But some people who would just want the easiest option, they'll go, yeah, okay, that's easy. I can just, I can stomach chicken for breakfast and for lunch again. And then there's other people who are like, oh, I'm going to get really bored of that. Can I not have something different for breakfast? So then, it might be that we look at maybe eggs, because it comes from the bird family. So they could have eggs for breakfast. And if, again, they're not happy to have chicken for lunch, then they can put in a different protein. They could choose something like lamb as an example, but then they would have to diarize the fact that they had lamb on Tuesday lunch, and now they can't have that until Saturday.
Right.
Yeah. And yep,
So
go for it.
it would be easier in, if they were bored of the chicken, if they had chicken on Monday night and then eggs for breakfast, and they're still allowed to eat chicken in this 24-hour period, like that's how long you've
Correct.
given them. Could they not
Correct.
have duck or turkey or something like that for lunch?
Absolutely. If they're willing to do so and they're willing to prepare two meals, then that's a perfect option. If you're cooking, depending on how many there are of you, obviously, but a really good example of this is, let's say you're just catering just for yourself. You could cook Monday night, you could cook a chicken Maryland for your dinner, and at the same time as cooking that chicken Maryland, you could do a duck Maryland and have that duck for the lunch the following day.
Yep. Gotcha.
Yeah.
So we got chicken, eggs, duck in a perfect world.
In a perfect world. And there's some training wheels that you've really got to, work through here with people. It's a completely different concept. It blew me away once when Paul said to me that the research that he had done showed him that the average person consumes no more than 10 different foods in a lifetime. And I was just like, what? But my experience having read through my own clients' food diaries, it's true. It is quite shocking how we fall into a routine of the same thing day in, day out. I mean, I read one client's food diary, and it was a chicken salad every single lunch, Monday to Friday.
More common than not, right?
Yep, absolutely. You get into the habit. We are creatures of habits. We go to the same food hall every lunchtime. We follow the same pattern. We go to the same, food hall. We order the same thing on the menu, and we go back to our desks and we do the same thing. And that's a little bit of an educational piece right there. is to, you know, educate our clients to change the habits. If we you know, want a different outcome, we have to do things differently.
Yeah. So we've gone through an example of a day one that might be chicken day. I can hear some birds going on in the background at your place.
I know. I'm out in the bush. I do. So let's go gorgeous.
Through maybe, I mean, just because you're a lot better at this kind of stuff than me and you wrote a whole book about this, let's go through maybe a sample day two. If that was mm-hmm. lamb day, or if we wanted to make it a bit easier for people, we could call that red meat day. So we got our bird day nailed, Monday dinner, Tuesday breakfast, Tuesday lunch. Could you run through maybe a training example of a lamb day and then like a really strict example of a lamb day, just so people could know what that would look like?
For sure. So, you know, if we started on Tuesday then and we were deciding to have lamb for a Tuesday dinner, then, you know, again, if you wanted to make it easy for yourself, then you would choose maybe some lamb chops for breakfast. It's a really easy lamb cutlets for breakfast on the Wednesday morning. If you've had maybe a roast lamb for dinner the night before, and you're happy to have the lamb again, as we spoke about with the chicken, then it's easy. You either have leftovers or you choose a different cut of lamb and you make, you know, a slightly different breakfast and lunch. And if, again, that's, you know, too boring, not enough variety for you, then you could look at having lamb from the bovine family for dinner. And then you could look at maybe cooking a beef dish, popping, you know, I'm a great slow, love the slow cooker. So, you know, Dave, for me, it's absolutely a no-brainer to, you know, throw in some beef and some vegetables and some lovely bone broth and some herbs and spices and, you know, pop that on overnight and I've got a beautiful warm breakfast to wake up to. So, you know, I might do that with beef. And then, you know, take some leftovers of that to lunch with me on that day as well.
Would it be okay to have yogurt from a cow on that day for breakfast?
Yep, absolutely. You know, another good alternative right there is, you know, to have, if you're, you know, if you know that dairy is okay and that's, you know, not something you're needing to rule out, unlike yourself.
Yeah.
Then choosing a well-cultured yogurt from either sheep. Sheep is preferable if people are looking for a lower allergy dairy product. Then either sheep or goats, when it comes to the yogurt or the milk, is a far less allergenic proposition for them.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's how you would basically continue through the week. You know, at the back of Paul's book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, he's got a really good example of a 4-day rotational diet based on the full-on taxonomy of the food groups. And, you know, he gives examples there of, you know, the carbohydrates that you would choose from, the proteins you would choose from, and then he has a little column of miscellaneous, which are the different types of herbs and spices that are relevant to particular family groups. And you would, you know, make up three meals in accordance to those three different food lists, and you wouldn't have anything else other than that.
For that 24-hour period, right?
For that 24-hour period. And then you'd move on to the day two rotation and select from what he's provided you there from food lists, from the carbohydrates and the proteins, and again from your miscellaneous, which is what helps you to, you know, make your food dish tasty and you know, adds the spice and the herbs, and you would continue to do that. And as I said to you before, the more somebody has a food allergy or intolerance that they are really trying to eliminate and determine what food family group it is that is stimulating this irritable response, then it's more and more important that they do the full-blown rotation based on the taxonomy and the similar genes of food groups.
Why don't we get into that a little bit? Because food intolerances are getting way more and more common. I obviously have an intolerance to dairy. I didn't eat dairy. Excuse me, I just had to cough. I ate dairy every day for years, and I stopped when I sort of started discovering this kind of stuff. And then I went for a long time without having any. I think it was months and months until I had any. I had some on Saturday, and now my voice has gone all funny. Can you explain why that might happen and why I might not have gotten any symptoms when I was eating it every single day, and why they might show up on a rotation diet?
So, there's multiple possibilities there, but the common ones are we so quickly adjust and adapt to environments and adapt to components of our environment, food being one of them. So the greatest analogy I can give you is that people don't, there's such a high percentage of people walking around with a gluten intolerance that they don't even realize they have, because they've been so accustomed to feeling bloated, to having a distended gut, that now has become the norm for them. They don't actually know what it feels like not to be bloated. So until you actually rest the gut and the intestines from that irritant, in this particular case, gliadin, the gluten of protein, until you actually rest your digestive system from that particular amino acid long enough in order for the inflammation to subside and for you to actually feel the difference, then you walk around really unbeknown to the fact that we have these intolerances. When we take out certain foods, such as gluten, as an example, and we have an experience of what it's like not to be bloated, and maybe the fog has lifted from the head, and we have clearer thinking, and maybe the skin improves, and maybe all of a sudden the bowel starts to regulate itself, far better than what you'd experienced before. All of a sudden, maybe you have a better response to exercise in the gym. And all of these, let's say, key markers that until you come off a substance, you don't have a benchmark for. So you have all of these key improvements. Maybe your moods aren't, you don't have such high and lows. Maybe all of a sudden you can regulate your blood sugar better. And you don't have the high and low energy or mood swings. And then all of a sudden you decide, oh, you know what? I'm going to now see whether or not gluten really did affect me. I've been off it for, 14 days. And yep, I'm not feeling as bloated. I didn't even realize how bloated I was until I wasn't having it. And I do feel clearer in the head. I do have more energy. I am going to the toilet more regularly. Now I'm going to have a slice of bread. And because you've almost created a clean slate, so to speak, the response and the reaction that you have if you are intolerant to gluten, the response and the reaction you're going to have to that slice of bread is far more, should I say, in your face. It's far more obvious to you than what you were ever able to decipher whilst being on gluten. And the same can be said for dairy. Now, I guess the real question that we have to ask is, well, how is it that we create these intolerances? Why all of a sudden, and children are a really good example of this. They're getting, intolerances to things far, far earlier in life than, let's say, adults that may have been absolutely fine and then started to develop an intolerance in their 40s. But up until that point, they hadn't developed an intolerance. So there's two things here. What creates an intolerance in the first place? And the most obvious one there, which is why we recommend rogue diets. The most obvious one is because when we continue to expose our immune system to the same pathogen or to the same element time and time and time again, we build up a intolerance to it. So step number one, which is why, you know, we've always been taught through the check system, is if you don't, you know, if you want to get an intolerance, then carry on eating the same thing day in, day out. It will be the fastest way to track yourself to having a food intolerance. In fact, I've got a great little story that qualifies exactly that. I remember when I first went through HLC level one with Dr. Oliver, he shared with us a story of how he was running with a team of doctors, scientists in a lab, certain experiments. And the experiments that they were running exposed them to, you know, some pathogens that was, you know, quite offensive to the immune system. So they had a bit of a ritual every morning that they would get into the lab. Dr. Oliver would do up a pot of ginger tea and, you know, put a little bit of a mix in there that was ginger-based to really boost the immune system and to guard the immune system against, you know, the exposure of what it was that they were researching. And that was a ritual that went on, I think, for something like 3 years. And one day, Dr. Oliver just hit the ground and had an anaphylactic reaction. And it turned out that he was having an anaphylactic reaction to the ginger. And he had, yeah, and he had created an intolerance for himself through the continuous intake of ginger. And it just so happened that, it, you know, for whatever reason, that affected his immune system to the degree that over that period of time, he created such a severe, that was no longer an intolerance. He had an allergic reaction. It was an anaphylactic reaction. And so, you know, that's what had been created through having that day in, day out. Now, obviously, you know, we're not guaranteeing that, you know, if you eat nuts every single day, you know, or 5 days a week for the rest of your life, we're not guaranteeing that you're going to get an intolerance or create an allergy, but your likelihood, the potential of creating an intolerance goes up when you continually expose yourself to any one particular substance. So, you know, that's one very common, I guess, analogy that I can give you. The other is that, you know, why do we have more intolerances and autoimmune issues today than ever before? And I, you know, I think the research is really starting to show us that food isn't food anymore. You know, our immune systems really are not recognizing food in its natural state, from which we have evolved from millions of years. Our food and what is produced within our food chain.
Yeah,
is
I've heard Dr. Tom say that the bread and the gluten that we eat today is very different to the stuff that Jesus used to eat, or very different to the stuff that we used to eat 100 years ago. It's much, much lower quality.
Mm. And, you know, that's just with gluten and with bread, which, you know, as we know, for the majority of people, it does make up their staple diet. Grains in general, for the majority of people, that makes up their staple diet. And grains of today, whether it's corn, whether it's wheat, barley, oats, they've been modified so greatly from, let's say, the whole food variety of that particular food, that, you know, there are pathogens and there are elements to that food that are now unrecognizable by our immune system. And as a result, our immune system goes in and it starts to attack anything that is appearing to be a foreign body. And when foods are changing so rapidly and becoming so far away from their natural profile, to the point where our immune system, that isn't evolving at the same speed, then our immune system sees it as a foreign body and goes into defend as it's designed to do so. And that's how we're creating these intolerances.
Yeah. So let's go to maybe one more final point, because you spoke about this earlier. And this is something that I find people do quite often. And that's to just get stuck in the idea that breakfast is eggs, or breakfast is yogurt, or breakfast is bacon, or breakfast is toast. Have you ever heard about Brinner? Do you know what Brinner is?
What's Brinner?
Brinner is dinner for breakfast.
I love it.
You mentioned lamb chops for breakfast on the hypothetical red meat day. I had slow-cooked beef this morning for breakfast. Should people be... I mean, if you told most people that, they'd think that's really weird, but breakfast serves the same purpose as lunch or dinner, and there's no rule that says, well, you have to eat eggs for breakfast, right? I mean, what are your thoughts around that?
Look, Dave, I completely agree. It's a really good example of how we've just been brainwashed, and, you know, we've been marketed to so very well, you know, by the food industry and by the food giants as to what is acceptable, you know, what is socially acceptable to eat for breakfast, what is, you know, being boxed and labeled as a breakfast item versus a lunch or a dinner. And unfortunately, we are, A, we're creature of habit, B, we are very easily convinced or very easily manipulated into believing, you know, things that we think are coming from a higher authority or an authority that, you know, has some credibility around the information that they're sharing. But if we brought it back to just a little bit of common sense, you know, you spoke right at the beginning about, you know, some fundamentals when it comes to nutrition. Well, if we just used a bit of common sense around one of the key fundamentals of nutrition is to nourish the body, is to provide the body with adequate energy and adequate nutrition for the body to run all of its systems. And so if we just looked purely at any meal of the day as another opportunity to nourish and fuel the body, then we would completely eradicate this concept that breakfast had to be toast with jam, or, as you say, you know, eggs and bacon, or a bowl of cereal, or, you know, Nutri-Grain, or, you know, Sugar Puffs or Frosties, or, you know, whatever that, you know, TV marketing is that, you know, has so many families kind of brainwashed and labeled and conditioned to, well, you know, this is what's right. And, you know, we do anything long enough and it becomes the norm. But normal doesn't make it right.
No. Well, normal and so, is overweight for most people these days, right?
Well, exactly. And you know, the obesity rates for kids these days is ridiculous. And, you know, sugar is a hidden drug that is hidden in about 74% of all packaged foods.
Right.
And, you know, there's a great new website out there that I encourage people to have a look at, families especially, and that's called sugarscience.org. And it's an independent website that is actually being put together by a group of independent scientists and doctors that are actually coming together and collaborating to really get the truth out there behind, you know, what is being considered sugar, the new fat. And, you know, I think it's a really important subject because, you know, again, it's important that we don't go bastardizing sugar as being, you know, the bad guy, because it's not. It's understanding the type of sugar that the body needs, you know, and how it works with the body and the type of sugar that the body doesn't need and in what form we should be taking in this natural food. But it's when it becomes an added sugar and it becomes added into everything. And as I said, you know, the average person's staple are, you know, are foods that are invariably packaged. And with a 74% of packaged foods with added sugars, there's the common drug right there.
Yeah. So I'm going to say one more thing here, Joe, before we wrap this up. And I think you'll agree with me on this. It might come to a point where, 30 years ago, people were saying, never eat fat, fat's so bad for you. But now we're saying fat's good for you. We might be saying, we're not going to, but hypothetically, it could come to the point where 30 years down the track from now, we say, well, sugar's good for you, and we were all wrong. Obviously, that's not going to happen. But my challenge to everyone, and I think you would agree with this, is to not believe anything that we say, but to go and try it first and foremost, because there's a lot of people out there saying a lot of things about nutrition, eat this way, this is right, sugar is good or sugar is bad, or fat is good or fat is bad, or whatever. But the only report card that those people are ever going to get is how the people who listen to them actually feel. And if you do something like a rotation diet and you feel like once every 4 days your voice goes all weird because you're eating dairy, as might happen to me if I started eating dairy again, or you eat eggs once every 4 days and you get a headache at lunchtime, or whatever it might be, then that's a pretty good example that eggs aren't working for you. No matter what anyone says, eggs aren't working for you. Would you agree that that's something that people should, keep in the back of their mind whenever anyone, you and I included, talks about nutrition?
Dave, absolutely. You're on the money. You're talking about honoring the individual for their own individuality. And, nobody has a greater standpoint for their own health than the individual. A doctor can't be in your body and tell you what is wrong. They are, governed by forms of diagnostics, and they're governed by an element of subjective feedback from you. But there is no greater control center, if you like, other than yourself, to really determine how you're responding to whether it's food, whether it's a supplement, whether it's the environment around you. Nobody has a better authority than you do. No doctor has a better authority on your own health and how you feel in your own body than you do. And so absolutely question everything.
I think today I'm a pretty good example of that, because yes, milk can be good for your bones and yogurt can have good probiotics in it and all that kind of stuff. But you can tell just by the sound of my voice that it's not right for me.
It's not right for you. And some people may argue, well, Dave, how do you know it was the dairy? And, that's where
I would say it's the only thing that I changed.
There you go. And you're going to come up, the average doctor, I'm sure, would have a number of other things that they would present as a potential argument to you. But, who's in your body? You. So at the end of the day, no matter what anyone else can present to you as a potential argument or, a potential alternative, at the end of the day, you're the person in your body, and only you can really know for sure, obviously without getting diagnostics done, if it is the dairy that has done that for you. And, you're the person who's experiencing exactly what the biological changes are in the body. So absolutely question everything. I've got, just a really good little story to finish up with around a client who, and I use this all the time because I just think it's it's one of the fundamental elements of life. And, to consider that we've either come to a point where we take it so much for granted that we no longer actually appreciate its role. And I had been, talking to a client for many months about the importance of water, and correlating her symptoms to her level of dehydration and her level of the lack of quality of water. And so, finally we had yet again another conversation, and we're about, 8 months into coaching by now. And I can't tell you how often, we have spoken about the importance. Anyway, the continued stiffness first thing in the morning from her back. And finally, I just turned around and said, look, I know that you don't. There is a part of you that almost cannot believe that just something as simple as water is actually going to make a difference to and eliminate the stiffness in your back. And I explained to her yet again how the inflammation in her gut was drawing on the water out of her tissues overnight to try and improve the detoxification of her gut and leaving her at a cellular level dehydrated. So I said, look, you know, there's only really one way to prove this, isn't there? Carry on doing everything that you're doing, but increase the amount of water to what I have told you you need based on your body weight and based on the formula that we use, and make sure it is top, top quality. And she said, okay, I'll do that. She went and bought a case of Evian, and she started to drink in accordance to the amount that she needed. It was about 2.3 liters a day. And within 5 days, she texted me, and she texted me first thing in the morning. She goes, oh, my God, I have no stiffness. I cannot believe it was just down to water. And I'm like, well, let's hope it doesn't take another 8 months to convince you of the importance of a correct breathing pattern.
Yes. It's another one that people underestimate, right?
Yeah, big time.
So Joe and I have been working on something behind the scenes for a little while for all the people who've been listening to this, because we're both pretty sick of diet books. I mean, yes, there are some books out there that are diet books, but they're more about diet principles like we're talking about today, like Joe's book, Rocket Fuel on a Budget, like my friend Liana's book, The Earth Diet, which just says, stop eating processed stuff. I mean, that's a pretty obvious one. But she gives you a lot of recipes in there. Or there's another book called The Metabolic Typing Diet, which says exactly what we're talking about today. I've got no idea what you should eat, but you need to go and figure that out yourself. So Joe and I have been working on some stuff for you in that regard. Joe, have you got any kind of words that you want to leave people with as a little teaser for that?
Well, I would say just watch this space and remember the words, you know, healthy by design, because it is healthy by individual design. And if you'd like to learn more about that, then Dave and I are going to have something a little bit special over the next few weeks that is going to help you to define exactly what that is based on your uniqueness. And to start actually creating health by design based on your individuality. Just based on your individual uniqueness.
Everyone's unique, right?
You betcha.
I'm excited, Joe. I can't wait for that. It's going to be good. So thank you so much for joining us today, Joe. You can find Joe on Facebook at Energy Coaching Institute. She teaches all around Australia. Actually, you are all over Australia at the moment, aren't you?
I am about to fly out to Melbourne on Thursday to teach HLC 1. And then I'm on a flight to San Diego to start training to teach HLC 2.
Right. Well, actually, you'll be doing that in April. I'll be there for that one.
Yes, I'll be there too.
Go and find Joe, Energy Coaching Institute, and you can find her teaching courses for the Czech Institute as well. That was actually the first time that you and I met, was at a Czech coaching course, Joe.
It was.
I remember I trod on your books. You had a stack of books next to your chair and I just trod all over it.
And I forgave you in an instant.
You did. That was very kind of you. All right, Joe, well, I can't thank you enough for joining me, and I can't wait to see what you've got planned for everyone coming up soon.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Dave. Always a pleasure chatting.
Thank you, Joe. Chat soon.
Take care. Bye.